Welcome to the September 20, 2021 meeting of the Chelan Public Utility District Board of Commissioners. This morning we'll meet in a business or a study and a business session. And due to the brevity of our portions of our meeting, we may get to some of the afternoon items prior to the afternoon just to let people know and be aware. Four of our five commissioners are present. We expect the fifth one shortly. Our normal staff of Steve Wright, our general manager, and Eric Walquist, our general counsel, and Teresa Boucher is our acting clerk of the board today. Due to the COVID virus, we're meeting remotely, and while normally I wouldn't, I would remind everybody to silence their cell phones. Today, I ask that you remember to remain on mute unless you're speaking and keep your cell phone silenced, especially while you're speaking, because it's, and I got to check mine real quick, because they have been known to ring when you're not muted. We do value public input at our meetings and will be providing an opportunity for the public to have input at the end of our meeting. And if you do wish to speak, we ask that you provide your name and address for the record, as our meetings are recorded and we wish to have an accurate record of your input. Now, this morning, our flag salute and safety minute will be brought to us by Jim White. But before I ask Jim to speak, I want to make one very brief comment and call out an individual at the utility who's been providing some really neat information for us for years and years, and that's Willard Fields. We get the historical update from Willard on a regular basis, and I find that just absolutely delightful, especially this week's note that he put out, that this is the week that Douglas PUD received their license for Wells Dam over the application of Puget Sound Energy, or Puget Power and Light as it was back then. And it made me wonder exactly when we got our license, and I haven't discovered it yet, but I will before our next meeting. I'm sure that somebody that's in this meeting today can probably off the top of their head give that answer. But anyway, Jim White, I've delayed you, so let's start with our flag salute and our safety minute with Jim White.
Okay. So would you like me to start with the Pledge of Allegiance first?
Yes.
Okay, well, I don't see a flag presented. I have one in my background. I'm not going to share it, but you'll have to find the nearest flag, and please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Thank you. So this past week, I was in Alaska. I spent a lot of time up and down a ladder. I thought, man, we should probably cover ladder safety. I consider myself a reasonably smart person, or intelligent somewhat. About a year and a half ago, I was standing on top of a wheelbarrow, if you can believe it. It didn't end well. Luckily, it was just a sprained wrist, but don't be an idiot like I was. My sister, one time, she was helping her husband. They set up a ladder on her porch, and top of the porch was a story up, and he was extending up, and she was holding the ladder, but she turned her attention for just a brief second, and he fell, not just from top of the ladder, but fell all the way down to the ground, which is over 15 feet. Luckily, he was not seriously injured. So these things happen. So when I'm 6'1", but there's always something that's going to be outside of our reach, right? We're going to want to get something, and the key is finding that right. What is that right instrument? When you're in your kitchen or you're in your house somewhere and you need to reach something and you can't quite get to it, you don't have to admit it, but does that thought glimpse of looking at that chair cross your mind? It shouldn't. You know, we shouldn't let that happen. In fact, we should have a readily accessible step stool, a step ladder that's available, and know where it's at and it's used. and you can get to things because there's always something that you need to get to. These extension ladders, I'm learning something about extension ladders. You ever wonder what those little dangly things are at the bottom of it? You know, you've got they shift around, and some of them even have the little sharp teeth on the bottom of it. And I am not quite sure if it's what that's intended for, if it's that slippery, if I want to really flip them around and stick them in the ground. But definitely use the you want that ladder sitting on a firm ground, and sets down. When you put that ladder in position at the feet, make sure that it's setting on something firm. If the ground is soft, you might have to go get a piece of plywood to stick it underneath it to hold it in place. The other thing that I learned is interesting, and we think something so dirt simple as a ladder could be complicated, but those extension ladders are really a two-person job. You want to make sure that you have somebody there to hold it and to help you as you're setting it up and going up, climbing up distance. Hold on just one moment. I can do it. Anyway, and the other thing is you want 4 points. As the ladder is sitting there, if it's juggling in any way, then you need to make sure that the where that's setting on is at the same 2 points that you're setting up, that there's that the ladder's not wobbling in any way. And the final thing is that getting it at the right angle. Nobody gets their tape measure out and says, okay, I have to be this far and this many feet up. But I learned a simple task is just to sit there and stand there. And when you reach your arms out, if you can grab the rung of a ladder, that's a good distance. If you have to be in close, it's you know, it's too steep. If you have to lean over, then it's too far out there. So it's a good rule of thumb. You just reach out your arms straight out. If you can grab a hold of that rung, you're good to go. So keep that in mind, and that's a safety minute.
Thank you, Jim. Commissioners, any questions or comments?
If I may, I'd like to comment. Jim, we had our house painted this summer, and there were some young men who came and they painted it in no time. But I was watching them with their extension ladder. We have very uneven ground, and they had a specialized ladder that had a kind of a spring-loaded foot that would drop so that if the ground was uneven, they could try to compensate for that. I had to go in the house. When he started climbing that ladder, of course, you would just scamper up it like a bunny. But I have this thing about heights anyway. But to watch him on this very, very uneven ground, and nobody was holding the ladder. He just scampered up it and sprayed the side of the house. It's amazing that that he didn't fall. And I hope he doesn't ever fall. But you're right. Ladder safety is nothing to take advantage of, or just to not pay attention to. So that was a really, really good presentation. Thanks, Jim.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Any other questions or comments? I do have one, Jim, and I know that you're no stranger to orchard ladders. And orchard ladders are a whole different animal. And the classic uneven turf, you know, an orchard ladder is a three-legged stool, in essence. But if you have that third leg going downhill, you've just set yourself up for a nasty spill. They always have to be aimed uphill. And so I say that because there's a bunch of people on here that might see an orchard ladder in this area quite frequently and want to use it because they are good. But aim uphill with the three-legged stool ladder that we have, what we call the orchard ladder. So thank you very much. So is Commissioner Congdon on yet?
Yes, I see her phone.
Yes, I'm on.
Oh, great. Yes. Super.
Thanks, Randy.
You bet. So item 2 on our agenda is the approval of the agenda. And as I said in my opening comment, we may get to some afternoon items, most probably will, before the end of the morning. So just to be prepared, we'll make the change when we get there. Management has recommended that agenda item 11 get moved to the consent agenda. Is there any objection to moving item 11 to the consent agenda? Hearing none, we'll consider it moved. And is there anybody on the the call this morning, non-staff, that wishes to speak to any of our agenda items this morning that we could make commissioners aware of at this time? Hearing none, I will turn the item three over to our manager, Steve Wright.
Okay, we have two Cycle of Personal Ownership winners this month, and we want to take a moment to celebrate these folks. First of all, Trent Grigsby has done a lot of work as we have moved to independent operations in the Mid-Columbias, where the Chelan Hydro projects are now operated independently from the other Mid-Columbia projects. He has excelled in terms of providing great customer service. And I think the thing that really hit the senior team when we looked at this is the quote at the bottom where one operator said, I'm just hearing a lot of relief from the guys down here in system operations that the tool that Trent had developed has really improved our ability to manage the river. Big thanks to Trent, and we really appreciate it. You know, we are about customer satisfaction, and it's not just external customer satisfaction, but internal customer satisfaction as well. And Trent has excelled in finding ways to be able to develop tools like automatic generation control procedures that allow us to be able to better do our jobs and be able to make sure that really difficult jobs like our hydro operators and system operators have, to be able to manage a big river that's changing all the time, to be able to do that in a not just an efficient way, but in a comfortable way, which is a really good place to be. So we want to say thank you to him. And if I could, I'm also going to jump to the second one is before we hear from these folks, and that's Pat Eagle. So Pat, we learned last week as we met with him, his senior team had some experience in the past that allowed him to be a more effective employee. He identified the problem with these stator sole plate keys, that they were moving in a way that they shouldn't be. And the importance of that is without that problem being identified, it could well have led to a forced outage, an expensive forced outage of some kind. This was not a part of his job. He wasn't expected to look for these things. He just figured it out and did it. And that probably has saved the district a substantial amount of money. It also has allowed us to recognize that we had a hole in our procedures and that we needed better standard operating procedures in order to be able to manage for that particular problem. So again, great example of someone who is taking personal ownership and saying, you know, what can I do to make this place work better? So we want to say thanks to both Trent and Pat. And Trent, we'll start with you. If you would like to share anything with the board, I'm sure they'd love to hear it.
Can you guys hear me all right?
We can.
Yes.
Sweet. Well, I just wanted to let you guys know I really enjoy working for the districts for the past about 6 years. And I really want to appreciate, thank you guys for the time you guys are taking to recognize my efforts. Working on this project has been fairly challenging, and I'm really happy to see that these changes that I've been making are having a positive effect on other members of the district. And again, I just want to say thanks.
Thank you.
And Pat, how about if, would you like to jump in?
Yeah, sure. You guys hear me okay?
We can.
Yes.
Okay. The same. I'd just like to tell you guys thanks for recognizing what's going on out here. We all appreciate that. I kind of see we got some extra training here a couple years ago for inspection and testing, and we were put through some of this to kind of help see some of these issues and you know, prevent problems in the future. So I kind of attribute this to that training, which everybody seems to really support and back.
Great. Thank you, Pat. I see a couple of supervisors on the line as well. I'll just open the door and say if anybody else would like to offer anything, now would be a good moment for that. Okay. Hearing none, I'll throw it to the board.
Commissioners? Well, the thing that hit me about both of these, the two individuals, Trent and Pat, that were recognized, is that in the organization of several hundred people, here's people that are stepping up on personal initiative to make our organization better. And that just absolutely thrills me, to know that we've got ownership in our organization and that we've fostered an atmosphere where they feel like they can do that. And I just want to keep that going. And I want to say thank you big time to both Trent and Pat. Thank you.
Commissioner Smith.
Yes, yes.
You absolutely said what I was thinking. And so, gentlemen, I appreciate your initiative and your willingness to step forward and look at things differently, and much appreciated. And Randy, thanks for identifying that as well.
Any other comments? Okay, thanks again to both of you. Item four. Item four, Riverfront Park Master Plan.
Commissioners, we do have a presentation for you here today. Justin Erickson will be leading this. I do want to call to your attention, we added some material this morning at 8:14 a.m. You would have received an email with some additional material. This is definitely a work in progress, and so we're able to provide some additional thoughts about the options that are available for the Riverfront Master Plan. So take a look for that. And with that, I'll turn it over to Justin.
Thank you so much, Steve. Good morning, Commissioners. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services. It's a real pleasure to be with you this morning. We've talked about this Riverfront Park planning effort several times over the last several months, and we're at a really key juncture as we go back out to the public a second time to get feedback. And so we are joined this morning by our planning and design consultants, Greenworks. They are a firm out of Portland and have done work across the Pacific Northwest. Joining us this morning is Gil Williams, principal of the firm, and Jason King, associate principal. Also wanted to remind the commission that this is a great partnership that we have with the city of Wenatchee. And so we are collaborating closely on this and jointly funding this effort. I believe Laura Merrill, Executive Services Director for the city, was able to join us this morning as well. So she's on the line and listening. And with that, I'd like to turn it over to Jason and Gil.
Thank you, Justin. Commissioners, can everybody hear okay? I make sure my speaker's on. Thank you. We really appreciate you having us here today to get you an update on our process. As Justin mentioned, we are a landscape architecture and planning firm out of Portland, Oregon. We've done work throughout the Pacific Northwest, a lot of work in helping communities realize the potential of their most prized possessions, that being their parks, and specifically a lot of work in riverfront park development. The industry starts to ebb a bit, we find that the riverfronts are very attractive places for folks. And so we admire that Wenatchee is embracing that and always has. So it's a pleasure to be involved with this. And as far as clients go, we've had a lot of different ones. And I will say that there must be something in the water in Wenatchee, because it's probably been one of the best experiences that we've had. A very engaged and active community. Folks are very interested in what's going on down here. And as a consultant, we really appreciate that. We appreciate the feedback. We appreciate the interest. And it's all very valuable. So as Justin said, we're at a point where we're going to bring it back to the community next Monday and Tuesday, well, actually next Tuesday, but we look forward to that feedback as we move the master plan forward. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to our project manager, Jason King.
Thanks, Gil, and thanks, Justin, and really appreciate the opportunity to give an update on where we are to the Board of Commissioners. I know Justin has given an update in the past, so you've sort of seen a little bit of this in progress probably over the summer, but one of the things that's working through this process, which has sort of started in the spring and is going to wrap up by the end of the year, really building on information that we've gathered in the early stages. So the information and analysis part that we've worked through, both with the TAC, that partnership with the PUD and the city, has been really great, working with the technical advisory committee. And then the Riverfront Park Advisory Committee, that layer of stakeholders, it provides us a lot of great input from the different communities that exist in Wenatchee that have overlaps and interest in the park itself. And then it's been fun to get to that next level engagement with public workshops over the summer. We've got the first one that happened this summer, and we're getting ready to do the second one. And next week, which is going to be really exciting to get that next level. So the idea of, you know, where we're at to date and then what we have left is looking at the focus area and alternatives, which is part of the next open house, and then turning that into a final preferred alternative where we'll develop some preliminary budgets, some phasing, and then finalize the master plan, and then kind of really be set up to work into next year to do some early work that gets people excited about seeing action happen. Next slide. So yeah, this is a little bit of that schedule. So in September, the public workshop, we've got a focus group specifically talking about the trails, and then through October and November, the finalization, and then by the end of the year, having this wrapped up and ready to go to implementation. Next slide. So we had the public input, which was a combination of in-person open house, which was well attended. I think had a great participation turnout over the three sessions, morning, afternoon, and evening. And then also supplemented by the online survey, so an opportunity for the people that couldn't get out to be able to provide feedback and input. So going to what Gil said, the amount of people that are engaged in the future of this riverfront park is really great to see, and the input we got was also really excellent. Next slide. We can share, I think, a more extensive document of all the input, but some of the questions that we ask and really thinking about, you know, how do people feel about the park? How do people use the park? What sort of elements exist that are working, certain things that don't work? There was a range of questions that we looked at, and then kind of looked at participation and looking at the idea that this is a park that people use often and regularly, which is a real statement to what it brings as value to the community, which we heard loud and clear in person and through the survey. Next slide. And then one thing you'll see is we got all the input and use these word clouds to really see the idea of how to show emphasis and capture all the feedback. So a question like, what's your favorite place in Riverfront Park? Everyone's going to have a variety of different places that resonate with them. So people mentioning the Pybus area, the boat ramp and that use, the Xeriscape Garden, and then the trails as ones that sort of stood out as places people use. And what were, you know, all of these questions that you'll see, there's a number of them, really shapes like the focus that we're going to bring to the design and how that's going to develop the alternatives, and then also ultimately the final alternative of what the master plan will show. Next slide. And a little bit of, this is one example of some of the alternatives we gave, you know, people, the idea of being able to provide your preference on certain things. Like there was a lot of feedback about, is this an active park where people are, you know, there's lots of activities and things going on, or is this a quiet park? And getting the feel for like, what's the right amount of, of, of activity to quiet that will sort of meet all the needs of everybody. So this is an example of one of those questions and getting that feedback where the idea that we have, you know, activity levels and energy in certain areas, maybe around Pybus or around the steamship plaza and other areas where it is more quiet. That's an example of how we'll sort of use that to shape the next level. Next slide. And then looking at program, one of the things we wanted to look at was what are people doing in the park and the activities that people are actively doing now? And then are there things we can do to add to the park itself to support additional activities that people want to do? And one of the things that came out was also like, really thinking about that seasonally, not just summer and trails and sort of recreation, but really thinking about how do you provide the infrastructure and the elements to make it a 365-day-a-year park and you know, provide that support for the things that people want to do and you know, not just during the summer, but during the fall, winter, spring, and that whole year. So this has sort of been a starting point and then adding to, you know, other things that we think are good options that we can provide the spaces in the park that can support those additional uses. Next slide. So we started with a series of concept diagrams, and I think the materials that you sent have all of the concepts. I'll just show some examples, but we took the feedback and really looked at certain zones of the park where we would identify changes or updates or areas that we would look at. And you'll see like the Grove where the picnic area, the sort of mini railroad zone, and like the boat ramp as sort of examples of that. What we did was looked at developing three concepts. This is one of them called play, where we really thinking of themes that you could use to shape a design. So, you know, the idea that the park would be playful, friendly, fun, and active for, you know, every generation from kids all the way up to seniors and really engage in that sort of idea. And if you go to the next slide, we turn those concepts, go back one, please. Turn those concepts into design alternatives. So what you'll see and what we're going to present at the open house are three design alternatives that represent potential options that have different themes. So one of them is more of like a nature-based theme where you're thinking of, you know, serenity and escape and reflection maybe on the quiet side with more landscape focus. The play scheme that I just mentioned where it is more fun and engaging. And then one that's an entertainment scheme that maybe is about sort of connecting with the adjacent businesses and supporting like things like dining and you know, concerts and activities there that are more entertainment focused. And ultimately, these alternatives will shape a final alternative that will probably have elements of each, but this gives us an opportunity to kind of give people an idea to decide on preferences and ways that they think feel right to them in terms of the actual specifics. And if you go to the next two slides, you'll see the zoomed in versions of these. So you can start to see what this would look like in terms of areas that we would be proposing changes to what's there and areas where we'd be sort of enhancing or keeping things in place. And really the theme with this that we keep going back to is the idea of looking at the park with areas of continuity. So the idea that the park as part of an overall system run by the PUD and the great resources and recreation through that is a really important resource, but looking at elements of distinction. So how does Riverfront Park fulfill a very specific need in the community and really express itself as a special place that it is? And how can we enhance this through some of our interventions? And then the next slide. And then one of the things we heard loud and clear in early conversations was we need to figure out ways to address trail conflict between the pedestrian and bikes and the capacity issues. So we looked at the trails themselves, the existing conditions that are there, and we've proposed a series of potential options on how to address that issue through either widening or additional sort of markings of the pavement, and we're getting feedback at the open house for some of those options as well. Next slide. And then lastly, we have sort of the next layer down of a design toolkit that we want to get input from the community on things like types of landscaping preference, furnishings, lighting, fencing, wayfinding and signage, and things like interpretation. So how can we tell some of those great historical stories and tie that into the interface and the exploration of the park? So all of these things will be part of the open house on the next slide, which we will similarly do a in-person session. This is the 28th morning sessions and afternoon at Pybus in outdoor, and then also have the online survey, which allows us to connect to that broader community and really get the broadest amount of input about these alternatives that will really give us clear direction on developing that preferred alternative. And I think that's all we got. If you have anything else to add, Justin or Gil.
Thank you, Jason. I just would like to open it up to questions that the commission may have.
Commissioners, any questions? Comments? I guess I'm excited to hear what the
Randy,
public input is going to bring. Yes.
I think the only question that I had coming into this actually got answered, and I just wanted to review that. Pleased to hear the openness of the three different options and having maybe some components of each flow between. They're not a done deal at this point. So I think that was my only question, Randy.
Okay, thank you.
Randy, can I jump in?
You bet.
I would like to echo what Christian McKenna just said, that it's exciting to see the various options and how they can all be mixed and matched. So it'll be very, very interesting to hear what the public has to say and what appeals to them. I did notice over by the train station there was a reference to a splash pad with a train theme. I just think that's totally creative. That's an excellent idea. And kind of it's going to be fun for the kids. That whole train area has always been a big hit with the kids. So I'm pleased to see that and anxious to hear what the public has to say. So thank you.
Dennis, I see you unmuted.
Well, Gary just happened to mention splash pad. It's been a burning desire. As you all know, to create some space in an appropriate setting for a splash pad for kids. And I guess where my excitement is, we do a lot in all of our parks for adult recreation. We've worked with the paddle club. We've worked with the city. We've expanded our boat docks. We've improved our camping sites for recreational vehicles. We have replaced and improved our play equipment for kids, but I really feel strongly about it's time to make a major commitment to kids in our community to do something in our parks that is at a commensurate level for what we do for adults. One further just comment, the complex that I live in is a couple of high-rise condominiums and 12 townhouses around the edge. And of the 12 townhouses, two of the residents of those townhouses have moved specifically to Wenatchee, located near the park, to parks to take advantage of them. And it's just, I think, a significant statement of the value of the parks to our community and its well-being. And I always joke that the quickest way out of being a commissioner was to denigrate the parks. And this is just really heartening to see the effort and work, and I really like the process that has been employed here to reach out to the community and see what's important to them. So well done. Thank you very much. And let's just keep this rolling.
Thank you, Dennis. Any other commissioner comments? Well, we look forward to hearing how next week turns out.
Commissioner, this is Steve. If I could add a couple of quick comments just to close this out. This is a very exciting project, and I have to say that I'm personally really thrilled to see it happening. But it's also a bit of a scary moment for me, too, honestly, because while what we're doing is displaying to the community what it could have and all the benefits, what we're not showing them are the cost. And so one of the challenges here is going to be managing expectations around what can we do and how quickly can we do it. We have thought of this as a master plan. It's not something that would take place in a year or two. This is over a longer term. So there are two elements of this that are going to be important. First is, what are the priorities for the end state? What do we want the end state generally to look like? And then second, what's the path to get there and how long will it take to get there? I was really glad to see Laura join us today. The city of Wenatchee has been a great partner on this project from the beginning, and has continued to show an interest and display a willingness to work with us, to look for grant money and other opportunities to be able to find some ways to be able to fund this project. We'll want to work with them, but of course we can't really do that until we've got the master plan in place. Where is it that we're trying to get to? So I do think for our consultants, that's something we're going to want to add to this package, is the clarity around the fact that it is a master plan, it's a long-term plan, and that at this point, we don't have costs for the different elements, and that will have to be part of the decision-making process in terms of priorities. That isn't just what we want, but how much does it cost to accomplish that? For Commissioner Bowles, I will note that each of the three options does include a splash pad. It's not just the one. So we have heard you on that, and I know the consultants have heard you on that, so we do have provided a variety of alternatives, and you in particular, Commissioner Bowles, may want to take a look at that and provide some thoughts. And
it's only been about an 8-year begging process, so I'm on my knees. Help me out.
I think we're getting closer here. With that, I think those are the comments I wanted to offer today.
Okay. Laura, I see you on. Any comments from the city of Wenatchee?
Good morning, commissioners. I just echo Steve's comments about this great partnership with the PUD. And, you know, parks are such a wonderful community asset. We've heard time and time again how much people enjoy living here because of the quality of life. And I think a lot of it has to do with the outdoor recreation. So we're happy to be a part of this. This has been a great process. I think Greenworks is doing a fantastic job. And we're just and excited to see the outcome.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other public comment? Well, thank you for a great presentation. And once again, we look forward to hearing how next week plays out.
Thank you.
Thank you.
On to agenda item 5.
Yeah, I want to introduce that, recall that we have been making a lot of moves with respect to managing the rehabilitation work at our hydro projects at both Rocky Reach and Rock Island. And as we've been doing that, we have been trying to think through not just what's the work that we have to get done, but invariably, at least since I've been here, and I may be the bad penny, we've had things come up during the course of the year that were surprises to us, and so we have to develop contingency plans for that. Kirk Hudson and his team have been doing a lot of work on this, and this is a presentation about how to plan for contingencies.
Good morning, Commissioners. Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. And just a note here, playing off of Commissioner Smith's history lesson early on in the board meeting, there was another item there on Willard Field's email this morning regarding history at the PUD, important history at the PUD. And one of them was, this is the eighth anniversary week of the cracked rod we discovered on C-10 and at Rocky Reach. And so you'll hear a little bit about that in this presentation as well. So as Steve pointed out, we're constantly reviewing our modernization work and the best way to perform that work and the outage schedules that we have in front of us. And just get to the punchline here on this presentation right up front. But one of the things we were planning to do with performing those long-term repairs on C-10 and 11 was to have that work done by a contractor. As we proceeded down that path, we recognized that the cost of having that work done by a contractor was approximately $10 million more than if we performed that work ourselves. So that was one key element driving this contingency plan. Second piece is we recognized that if we're going to try and implement that work as efficiently as possible and use our crews, this contingency plan was critical for moving forward, and that is that we know things are going to pop up unexpectedly, and we want to build resiliency into our schedule so that when things do unplanned work does pop up, that we can respond to it and still keep our major modernization and rehabilitation work on track. And the third item is that as part of the reevaluating these schedules and the best way to perform the work, saving the district money, we have a recommendation to increase our staffing levels for the hydromechanic workforce temporarily over the next 3 years by increasing their workforce by 4 positions. And I'll get into a little bit more detail on each of those elements here as we move forward. So next slide, please. So this contingency plan to build in resiliency has 8 components to it. The first one I just touched on, which was C-10 and 11 work. We're planning to perform this work with our own workforce, but the first bullet item here is that we also want to put a contingency contract in place so that we would have a contract available to us if we need it, if things really change and we needed to proceed with a contractor, that we would actually have that vehicle to do that without the long lead time to put that in place. So that's one piece of the contingency plan. Second one we touched on was to hire additional hydromechanics, namely 4 of them. The third one was to utilize existing dock crew contracts and small works contracts. We have a mechanical dock crew contract in place that's for general commercial mechanical type work. And then we have small works contracts in place that we could utilize for some mechanical work. The next bullet item, the fourth one, is to develop a new specialized mechanical dock crew contract. This would be somebody that's not just general commercial mechanical type work, but somebody that actually has experience and capabilities to do large turbine and generator work on hydro units. So this would likely be a original equipment manufacturer. The fifth item is to work with the support areas around the district. We know that all the work out at the hydros can't be done by itself. With people out at the hydros, it takes an entire team across the district and able to pull that off. And so we're certainly going to work with our partners in the support areas, namely on the legal, financial risk management side, engineering and project management, contracting side of things. That's who we rely on the most to help out with these things. So as things pop up, we'll be working with those areas to figure out how we can adjust. Next item is actually working with one of our partners, the Energy Northwest, to look at the things that they've learned over the years in the outage work that they do, particularly at the nuclear facility, Plant 2, out at Hanford. They have a large workforce that they bring in temporarily, and they have to keep that project on track, and so they have learned a lot over the years on managing critical path items and things that would pop up
unexpectedly how to address those in a short period of time. So we plan to work with them closely and learn as much as we can from them. Next item is to identify at what we call at-risk units. This would be units, a good example of this would be the small units at Rocky Reach, where we know we've got trunnion bushing wear. We just don't know the timing of it. And so one of the things we're doing is developing action plans associated with, well, if one of those units goes down earlier than we thought, how would we respond to it? So we'll have plans in place for things like that as well. And then last but not least is developing contingency contracts to execute the remaining Powerhouse 1 work. And this would be different pieces of the work, such as stay ring machining or discharge liner work that we know has to be done as part of our effort to do more of this work ourselves at Powerhouse 1. So you can see that the mechanics, the additional mechanics, is just one small piece of an overall larger contingency plan. Next slide, please. So really getting down to the recommendation to look at hiring four additional mechanics temporarily, I wanted to provide the detail in terms of the data we're looking at to drive that recommendation. You can see on this chart, this is forecasted hydromechanic hours from, it has a little bit of history associated with it just to see as a reference point, 2019, 2020, then it goes out to 2023. The blue bars are the available hours we have for our hydromechanics, and you can see it's up around 90,000 hours. That's adjusted for things such as, you know, vacation time and whatnot. So those are the hours we think we have available to us. The red line is the amount of planned work we have, work we know we have in front of us, already scheduled, already programmed, materials, contracts, things like that on the way. And then the green line is typically what we see is actual work. And you can see there's a difference there between the planned and what we would forecast to be actual work. And we call that gap the contingency. So even regardless of whether we hire the four mechanics on the blue bars going from 51 to 55 in 2022, we fall short of the green line, which you know, we recognize that that wouldn't fix everything. And that's why those other elements of that contingency plan come into place, those other contracts. That's how we would cover that gap. But what the adding four mechanics does, it gets us above the red line. If we did not add those four mechanics, you could see that that blue bar in 2022 and 2023 would actually be below the red line. Next slide, please. This is just a breakdown showing you the different elements of these 80,000 to 90,000 hours worth of work forecasted over the next couple of years, and the bulk of it, almost half of it, if not more, on average, is the modernization, overhaul, maintenance work at Rocky Reach and Rock Island. And you can see in 2023, that's by far the most. As we work on Powerhouse 1 and work on getting these long-term repairs done on C-10 and 11. Next slide. This table just illustrates that if we do not hire the additional four mechanics, we would end up at a negative contingency level, and which just tells us it's something we could do. What would likely happen is the outage schedules would slip further, and a deficit contingency mode, you know, we would take people off of those modernization projects to handle the unplanned work that would pop up and try and move them back as soon as possible. And then with the 55 mechanics temporarily adding four, it does give us a little bit of contingency between 4% and 7.5% in 2023. Next slide, please. The recommendation, and should have stated this up front, We're just looking for a head nod or an objection as to whether we proceed along these lines. But our recommendation is to hire four more mechanics. We would track this separately as a temporary increase to our baseline. We certainly view this as a bow wave of work that if it gets completed in the 2024 timeframe, the amount of hours needed would drop. So that's why we would track it as a temporary increase, and then we'd have the opportunity to reevaluate it, the baseline staffing levels upon completion of the large Rocky Reach turbine repairs. And we would have the opportunity to potentially attrition those temporarily increased positions out through retirements at that point. With that, are there any questions, any additional information I can provide? And again, we're just looking for a head nod or an objection as to whether we proceed along these lines.
And commissioners, before we go to that, let me just add something about why we bring this forward. You may recall that the decisions on FTE, the general manager has the authority to make, but I made a commitment to the board when I first got here that we would display for you anytime we were increasing FTE in general. We try to manage that through the budget process. We rarely bring changes to FTE in the middle of a year, only when we think there's something critical going on. This is probably maybe the second or third time since I've been here we've done this. But we are in the middle of a change to our strategy with respect to how we manage these hydro projects. And we're at a point when it seems like it's important to be able to make sure that we are in a position to be able to manage for contingency work. So that's why this is coming forward, and coming forward in the context of a head nod or an objection from you.
Commissioner Smith, Andy,
this is Steve.
Yes.
Stephen, Kirk, my take on this is I really appreciate the ongoing learning and being able to be flexible midstream and continue with the efforts to reach our goals. So I appreciate that, and you've got my head nod.
Any other?
Mr. Smith? Yeah.
Yep.
Kirk, the question I have is, obviously, hiring four more mechanics adds an expense, but it also has to improve our rate of returning those units to service. So there would be returning those units to service would increase our revenue. So is there an anticipated what that offset may be? Is this proactive decision that has a rate of return to it? Does that make sense, what I'm trying to ask?
Yep, it's a great question, and it's an interesting one because these units are running right now. We were able to keep them running by moving them to a fixed blade operation. So in answer to your question, the return, there is a return here, and it's not so much in returning units to service earlier, although we do think there's a chance, and we're looking at it now, to try and get this repair done earlier than we would have expected to if we used a contractor. But the real savings to the district in this particular case with this contingency plan to be able to do these long-term repairs ourselves are it would cost us an additional $10 million to do this with a contractor. And so by being able to bring in some additional mechanics and as part of an overall contingency plan, that's really where the savings is to the district. And you're right, there is a cost to hiring those employees, and we estimate that cost to be somewhere with the four hydro mechanics, somewhere in the $600,000 per year range. And so if we looked at it over a three-year period, you'd look at somewhere between $1.8 and $2 million for that additional workforce that we'd be bringing on temporarily versus paying a contractor over $12 million. Does that make sense? Question.
Yes, it does. And that's worthy of a head nod of its own. Second thing is we have an aging workforce. In terms of our planning for the future, we probably will have some. In other words, when these projects are completed, when these projects are completed, we will have perhaps retirements in there. Because what do you do with former mechanics once we kind of move toward completion? But in terms of retirements, is there thinking regarding these also being replacement employees for retiring mechanics?
Yeah, there is.
Does Jumble make any sense?
Yep. It does make sense. And we would expect during this time frame over the next 3 years, somewhere between 5 and 10 employees would be eligible for retirement. And so that's we always let the workload, if you will, or the forecasted labor drive the need for staffing levels. And so at that point in time, we would be looking at, we'll know more information there, certainly how all this plays out, and then we'll know whether the hours are there and that they would potentially be replacements for people that would retire, or whether we would allow those retirees to leave and we'd already have them in place. So either one.
Double head nod. Thank you.
Thank you, Dennis. Any other listener comments? You've got my head nod.
If I could just jump in and say that as I read the in preparation for today's meeting, the write up, it made perfect sense and was quite logical to follow this pathway forward. So you definitely have my head nod as well.
So Anne, I know you're on the phone. Is your head nodding?
Yes, Randy, it is. Thank you.
Okay, very good. Okay. Thank you, Kirk. Good presentation.
Thank you, commissioners.
At this time, we've reached the end of our morning agenda, and I've been looking at the afternoon agenda, and I recognize that we are in need of approximately an hour for an executive session. I'm wondering if that's the appropriate item to put on the agenda to fill out this morning. Does that meet with the approval of my fellow commissioners? I'm seeing heads nod. So if that being the case, it's now 11 o'clock. I'd like to move into executive session for approximately 1 hour to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement actions, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party, and or legal risks as authorized by the RCWs, and to evaluate the qualifications of an applicant for public employment, and to review the performance of a public employee as authorized by the RCWs. So we'll all need to hang up and call back in on the executive session line. See you there. Okay. Good afternoon. Welcome to the afternoon business session of the September 20, 2021. That's hard to say sometimes. meeting of the Chelan Public Utility District Board of Commissioners. We met this morning in study session and executive session, and reconvening here at 1 o'clock to wrap up the business session. So, without further ado, the first item on this afternoon's session is our consent agenda, which has been modified to include resolution number 11. So is there a motion for approval?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to approve the consent agenda. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion is carried. We're now on to the regular agenda, item number 10. Steve Wright, I'll turn it over to you.
This is a resolution ratifying field work order change orders number 15 through 20 and authorizing the general manager to execute field work order change order number 21 to contract 16-60 with Andritz Hydro. And Brett Bickford is here to present today.
Good afternoon. I'm Brett Bickford, Director of Engineering and Project Management, to provide some of the details about this resolution. And this first field work order to be ratified is for spare parts for B1 to B4. These are items that our warehouses don't typically stock, are often long lead items, and might only be available from one vendor. Our field work order 16 was the purchase of long lead materials for the upcoming repair of the B3 discharge liner. Field work order 17, which was issued as a directive, approved a turbine design modification and supplied some extra spare parts because of that modification. Field work order 18 was issued as a directive for assessment of liquidated damages in the amount of about $1.4 million for late completion of construction of B4. Field work order 19 was issued as a directive to suspend the start of the B3 unit disassembly, which was originally contracted directly follow B4. And this was done so that the district could work with Andritz to confirm guarantees for B4 to verify modifications on B5 through 10, to also resolve outstanding claims and to work on pricing for repair of B6 and B9 turbines. Field work order 20 was executed to help bring some technical expertise from outside of the United States due to limitations during the pandemic. Field work order 21 is a new resolution, a new field work order. It requires board authorization before we could execute it. And this would provide reimbursement to Andritz for tariffs that were imposed for procurement of turbine runners, turbine hubs, and head covers. These tariffs were enacted after the contract was executed and after manufacturing had started. The total of this field work order, if approved, would authorize reimbursement of $649,810.25. Are there any questions?
Commissioners, any questions? I hear no questions. Thank you.
Thank you. You're welcome.
Commissioners, this is the one regular agenda resolution. Is there a motion to approve?
I'll make the motion.
Moved by Gary Arsenault to approve Resolution 10. Is there a second?
A second.
Seconded by Commissioner McKenna. Is there any discussion on the motion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is carried. Manager items.
We have a few today, actually. I want to start with Carrie Wendell. We'll give a COVID-19 update. I might add that the key here is that the data itself, which we've been presenting regularly, hasn't changed a lot, but we are headed towards the end of the moratorium at the end of the month that was instituted by Governor Inslee. So I want to just make sure the board is aware. We've talked about this before, but make sure you're aware of the actions that we'll be taking as we come to the end of the moratorium. Carrie?
Good afternoon, Commissioners. This is Carrie Wendell. This is, as Steve said, this is basically the same presentation as you've been hearing over the last few months. Next slide. Oh, there we go. So these are the typical numbers that we've been seeing, right around 395 accounts that were past due as of August 31st. As I said, not a lot of change with this slide, and you don't have, if you have any questions, we could stop. If not, we can move on to the next slide. The past due residential revenue from this month is down to about $162,000. So as you can see from the chart, the amount is going down for as the typical during this time of the year. Next slide. This is the Helping Hand distributions for the month. And as of the end of August, we're, you know, pretty much in the same same number as the last couple months, and so that hasn't changed either. So we can move to the next slide. Same with this slide. Actually, energy assistance through community action, we had about 47 customers that were helped this month, and we're continuing to help. More have came through for this month already, so that slide hasn't changed.
Carrie, a quick question.
Okay.
You know, I'm looking at the number of customer assistance since March of 2020, and how much out of the ordinary is that assistance from prior years? And maybe you can't answer it right now, but is it significantly higher?
I would say yes, it's significantly higher. I can find out those amounts for you if you'd like. I know that the additional $500 has made a bigger difference in those that number. So I can find that out for you if you'd like.
It'd be really interesting.
Just okay.
To get a data point to see, you know, how that's gone.
Okay. If you can go, we can go to the next slide. So basically, this is an update on the moratorium. The moratorium that was set up in March of 2020, it's actually been 18 months. So for that, the moratorium basically was to stop disconnects for non-payment for residential customers and stop the late payment fees. So that is set to expire as of September 30th. As we know now, the governor's office has said this is the final extension. So next slide. So we continue our ongoing preparation for the moratorium. We've been providing our customers notice that the moratorium is ending. We've sent out postcards for those customers who have who we haven't received payment from for quite some time. So they have all received notification that the moratorium is ending, and that that information was sent to them to encourage them to contact us to make payment arrangements, as well as the number to contact us for community action to set up appointments for some of their programs. So at this point, we're still making that contact. We have radio ads planned for later this week and next week starting. And we're going to continue to make the phone calls that we make daily for these customers. So I'm open to any questions that you might have at this point, but you know, we just continue to do our normal business and you know, encourage our customers to get in touch with Community Action for assistance and continuing to make payment arrangements. So that's all we can do.
Randy, I have a question.
You bet.
Carrie, I'm going to make an assumption that on the bills going out to the customers who are in arrears, that there is a running total column letting them know what the total amount past due is. Would that be correct?
That is correct.
And that goes out with each bill, right?
Mm-hmm. And along with each of the late notices, though, there's also information on that go with late notices letting them know the options as well to contact us. But the balance is showing up on every single bill.
Thank you. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions for Carrie? Thank you for the update.
Sure. Thank you. I'll get back to you on your question as well.
Okay. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Next up, we want to discuss a couple of bank stabilization projects we have coming up. Justin Erickson will make this presentation.
Good morning, Steve. I believe we actually have Ryan Baker on with us.
Oh, great. Okay.
Yeah. Thanks, Ryan.
Hey, you bet. Good afternoon, commissioners. Ryan Baker, Parks Manager. First, I just want to say thanks for your support and interest in parks. I had an opportunity to listen to this morning's discussion about master planning at Riverfront, and I just appreciate you weighing in and all the support you've provided. So jumping into what I'm here for today, and that is a brief presentation on some of the bank stabilization projects that we have, particularly at Beebe Bridge and Kirby Billingsley Hydro Park. Next slide, please. Maybe we'll start up north with a great aerial photo of Beebe Bridge. The project we plan to do is going to rehabilitate about 1,500 feet of riverfront in the campground there. The work actually starts today, so that's good timing. And we expect to wrap up by early November, depending on conditions. Some of the impacts that you might see are closures of the river sites within the campground, but the rest of the campground remains open. Really excited with this design. There's several touch points within the design, and that's where we channel folks to access to the river. A good example of that, I know you guys have spoke to before, is Walla Walla Point Park. Folks can access the river. The overall cost of this project is just over $1 million. Next slide, please.
Excuse me, moving on in the background until, if that's all right, until...
Commissioner Congdon, your phone is not on mute.
Next slide, Teresa, please. Jumping down to Hydro Park. There it is. A nice aerial shot of Kirby Billingsley Hydro Park there. We plan to rehabilitate approximately 700 feet of riverbank down there between the boat launch and south to the main river portion, or entrance of the park, I should say. Effective dates of this work began back in September of, the 13th, and should finish up in November as well. Some of the impacts with this project, we did close a small portion of the spur trail from the boat launch to the main portion of the park. And again, that's for safety for all the equipment moving to and from. You're also going to see some staging areas located within the boat launch area itself. I get all excited about touch points, but we have touch points with these projects as well, and that'll provide more access to the water within our parks. Next slide, please. The cost of this work is coming in just over $1.1 million. But after talking this over with Justin, this last slide was, really worth a million words here, in that you can really see that erosion, how it's creeping up to the picnic table, and then the trail is just behind that. So it is important that we continue to do these projects, because it does protect a lot of our assets and our parks. So with that, I'll pause and see if you have any questions.
Commissioner, any questions? I hear no questions, Ryan. I just want to share with you that in the last few years, my wife and I have taken up doing a lot more walking, and we've taken the opportunity to start exploring the trail along the park there, and it's neat to see that we're paying attention to those aspects, because our parks are jewels, and we want to take care of those jewels that we own.
Well, I appreciate those comments, Commissioner. It's something that we look at very closely. We actually survey on an annual basis, and we keep an eye on how much we lose. A lot of times with these projects, I'm working with agencies. Once you lose that park, you can't get it back. So I appreciate your comments there.
Any other comments? Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Commissioners, the last item today, manager item, is one that I'm going to take. I want to give you an update on Columbia River Treaty activities. I think that the board is probably generally familiar, but I want to just make sure you've got the overall picture for what we're trying to accomplish here. So back in early July, Senator Cantwell challenged us to think about what we could do as part of the budget reconciliation process and the infrastructure bill that was going along at the same time. And we put together a paper that identified four things that we thought could be done. In fact, I'm even going to summarize them in terms of three areas. The first was to try to think through how the river could be operated differently. When the treaty was put together in the 1960s, we had a very fundamentally different concern about how to manage for electric needs. We were an energy-constrained, not a capacity-constrained system. And so the treaty was really built around optimizing energy production. Now, with all of the solar and wind that's on the system in the West and increasingly in the Northwest, we have surpluses of energy and shortages of capacity. So a piece of this was to encourage, with funding, studies that could be done jointly between the Bonneville Power Administration on behalf of the Northwest and presumably BC Hydro on behalf of British Columbia to look at how the system could be operated differently that would maximize value. It's the old adage of, if you can increase the size of the pie, it gets easier to divide the pie. So that was one piece, and associated with that was the potential for funding for any new transmission, because it could be that the result of those studies would be that the U.S. And Canada would find mutually advantageous to be able to increase the electricity trade between the two regions, and that new transmission would be necessary in order to take advantage of that opportunity. The second piece was to address the flood control problem. The flood control issue has been a concern since we started this whole process back in around 2010 about how would flood control work post-2024. And it appears that flood control interests have asserted themselves in a fashion where they have encouraged that the notice, the 10-year notice of termination of the treaty, not be issued. So how do we help to reduce the uncertainty around flood control? Two things. First of all, a proposal to include $800 million in appropriations and authorization for the Corps of Engineers, recognizing that post-2024 flood control is degraded. There is some flood control provided on the treaty, but it is not the same, and that there will be a need for a payment either to be made to Canada or, alternatively, payments for activities on the U.S. side of the border to increase flood risk protection, levees, storage, those kinds of things. So the $800 million could be used for either purpose. And secondly, there have been concerns that potentially stream flow changes could reduce the level of the Grand Coulee Reservoir, and that if the reservoir is lowered, that it might make it difficult to pump water into Banks Lake for the Columbia Basin Project irrigation. So the idea was to provide funding to either extend the pipes or make the pump generators bigger, either of which could help resolve the problem and make sure that, in fact, the irrigators in the Columbia Basin Project would continue to receive the water that they have historically received. Part three was a proposal that takes into account that that from a ratepayer perspective in the Northwest, the 10-year notice of terminating the power provisions of the treaty should have happened a long time ago. In fact, should have happened in 2014 when it first became available to the United States. And that there is a real cost likely to be incurred by Northwest ratepayers starting in fiscal year of 2025, which would be September of 2024, that is likely going to be in the range of $150 million, and we estimate it to be north of $150 million a year for all Northwest ratepayers. And that there appears to be things going on here that cause the U.S. to not issue that notice, which are not related to power. They may be flood control related. They may have to do with much larger issues associated with the Canadian-American international relationship. So we have proposed that if that notice is not issued or a fix has not been put in place by that time, that the Bonneville Power Administration should be able to get a credit against its annual repayment to Treasury, which is in the range of anywhere from $700 to $900 million a year, equivalent to the lost value that is accruing to Northwest ratepayers, which would be that $150 to $200 million a year number by our estimates. Although the language would actually have the Bonneville administrator make a calculation and determine what that level of benefit should be. So those are the three things we've been pursuing. Now, an update on where we're at. The studies that were proposed to try to find a better way to operate the river system and the associated authorization of transmission in an amount that likely would be equivalent to something around $750 million to $1 billion. Has been included in the Senate infrastructure bill. The House is waiting action on that to see what will happen with the budget reconciliation bill. There is an expectation now that that bill will pass as is and be sent to the president. The president has indicated he will sign it. So it appears there's a very high likelihood that those provisions will be adopted. Also embedded in that same provision is the funding for the Bureau of Reclamation to extend the pipes or expand the pump generators at what's called John Key's pumping facility at Grand Coulee. So that also appears likely to be authorized based on the current expectations about how that bill will move forward. On the money for the Corps of Engineers, the $800 million, Senator Cantwell did offer, or at least put in public view, the amendment, and then withdrew it. There were committee jurisdictional issues that caused it to be not ready for moving forward at that point in time. But just the fact that it's been out there in public has generated a fair amount of conversation, including with the Senate Environment Committee and Public Works, the House Committee of Transportation and Infrastructure, and at the Office of Management and Budget around. So what is it that's trying to be accomplished here? Something that we've had difficulty getting on people's screens. So we feel like there has been certainly some success just in terms of elevating the importance of this issue and the recognition that it is tied to the fact that ratepayers are incurring a cost now in order to protect flood control. On the third piece, at the markup of the House Energy and Commerce Committee last Monday, Representative Kurt Schrader from Oregon offered the proposal, as we put it together, to allow a credit against Bonneville's repayment. He was supported in that effort by Representative Kim Schreier, who represents us, who represents Chelan County, and had visited with us just a couple of weeks before, and we had a chance to describe this to her, and she made a very strong defense of the amendment. And Representative Kathy McMorris Rogers, who of course represents the district next to us in the Spokane area, also spoke in favor of the amendment. Once again, there were committee jurisdiction issues that plagued the amendment, and so we were unable to move it forward at that point. Representative Schrader did withdraw the amendment, but before withdrawing it, the committee chairman, Frank Blown from New Jersey, committed to working with the Northwest members to elevate this issue within the administration and seek to get greater attention and hopefully better resolution. So at this point, we have a few things still in play. We haven't given up on anything, actually. We're still looking for opportunities because the process is still moving to see if we can include other of the items. But we feel like we've had some pretty significant success in terms of escalating the issue and in terms of its importance. and creating greater commitment from key members of Congress to making sure that we find a way to get to resolution. This is taking an extraordinary amount of time to put together, but given the value to Northwest ratepayers generally, to Chelan ratepayers as well, we feel like it's been worth it. So with that, I'll be happy to take any questions or comments that you may have.
Questions, commissioners? So, assuming the infrastructure bill passes and gets signed, the Senate infrastructure bill, this is embedded within that bill that's already passed the Senate.
The pieces that would authorize the $10 million for a study between Bonneville and British Columbia, the associated authorization for up to somewhere between $750 million to $1 billion for a new transmission, and the provision that would allow $50 million to support the expansion of the Keys pumping project to address the irrigators' concern if the stream flows were to change. Those three pieces are included in the infrastructure bill. The other pieces are ones that we're still seeking to find a home for.
So making Bonneville whole is not part of the infrastructure bill?
No. We are trying to do that as part of the budget reconciliation bill. We would have tried for the infrastructure bill, but just the way the process worked, when the bill came across from the Senate, a decision was made in the House that they were going to seek to not amend that bill, and they would seek to adopt it in whole. So that caused us to go down a different path.
Okay. Other questions from commissioners? Good update. You know, I wanted to say a little bit tongue in cheek, Steve, but I can't see you if you smile or grimace when I do this. That on your balance, on your metrics for your progress on the Columbia River Treaty, on your balanced scorecard, are you threatening to turn that yellow now rather than red?
Unfortunately, I think it's still red because the balanced scorecard item is to actually get the termination notice issued. So I think we're closer, but not enough to turn it yellow.
Okay. Well, I mean, yellow means there's hope, right?
I think there's a fair chance that I'm going to leave that to the next general manager.
Okay. All right. Any other manager items?
That's it for us.
Okay. Commission items. None of my fellow commissioners has any. I have one. And I think I was very surprised last Wednesday when I dialed up Zoom for our PUD Association meetings to have our manager, Steve Wright, doing a presentation to our Wapuda Roundtable. He hid it from us. But he couldn't hide it forever, and he did I think there were four of us in attendance at that session, and he did a presentation that I think probably some of the staff members here have seen before on leadership, and I just want to say that was an outstanding presentation, and I think it was very well received by the commissioners and the staff that were in attendance. I can't say enough good things about it, Steve.
Thank you. That's a presentation I gave at an APPA leadership conference about a year ago. I think that's how Wapuda found out about it. And they called and asked if I would do it here. And I actually didn't realize the audience was commissioners until I stood in front of the camera that day. So that was news to me.
Well, you adapted well. You did. And there were some great things for us to consider in leadership. Good job. So any other commissioner items? follow up on delegation of action items from the previous board meeting?
There were no delegated action items, so that one's an easy one today.
Okay. Delegation of action items from today.
I did not hear any. Wait, Teresa maybe did hear one?
Yes, it was.
Yeah, I know I had one. Terry's getting back to us.
Right, that's it.
Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Exactly.
Yep, that's all right.
Okay, so we got one.
Okay, logistically, we need to take a break until approximately 2 o'clock and come back into session at 2 o'clock. And so at this time, we will pause our meeting until 2 o'clock and come back into session right at 2.
Same number, correct, Commissioner?
I believe so, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Recording.
We're starting.
It started now.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Well, coming back from our short break, we have one last agenda item, and that is item 17, matters of general business as may necessarily come before the commission. Are there any other matters to come before the commission today?
Mr. Chairman, this is Commissioner Congdon.
Yes.
I have an item of great import. So may I proceed?
You may.
Okay. Well, first of all, I'm very excited to be in the boardroom after probably 2 years, I think. So, and nice to, wonderful to see everybody. It is my great privilege to move to offer Kirk Hudson an employment agreement to be the district's general manager beginning January 1, 2022 for an initial term of 5 years at a starting salary of $339,480,000, leave accrual at the maximum rate plus 8 days, and other standard employee benefits offered by the district.
Thank you. Is there a second to that motion?
Mr. Chairman, it is my privilege to second the motion.
All right, commissioners. It's been moved and seconded to offer Kirk Hudson an employment agreement. And I will repeat it, to be the district's general manager beginning January 1, 2022, for an initial term of 5 years at a starting salary of $339,480, leave accrual at the maximum rate plus 8 days, and other standard employee benefits offered by the district. Is there any discussion of the motion? I see smiles. Well, hearing no discussion of the motion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Aye. Are there any opposed? Is Kirk in the room with you?
He is.
He is.
Ah,
I'm here.
Are.
There you are, Kirk.
Kirk, I don't know exactly how to say this, but we are excited to have you as our next general manager and look forward to many years of great performance, great achievement. We are really looking forward to it.
Well, I just, I have to say thank you. And I am truly honored that the board has chosen me to be the next general manager. And I really look forward to serving in this capacity. Thank you all very much. It was a very thorough process, and thank you.
Well, you competed against the nation. I just want you to know that. So.
It felt like it.
So I, congratulations, Kirk, and I get to stand up and either shake your hand or give you a hug, don't I?
Yep.
Okay, knowing that there's probably going to be a few phone calls this afternoon. Is there any other business to come before the commission?
I would just like to have Kurt be mindful, I believe, that you are the 13th general manager. And having said that, that's a very few people in a very long time and a very distinctive position that you're in, and have absolute confidence in your leadership and the direction we're going. So thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
All right.
I would just like to add my congratulations. Going back to the idea of it felt like it was a national competition, it certainly was. You competed well. This job wasn't handed to you. You earned it. And you should feel very proud of the job that you did, competing with great candidates. You know, I was just really proud of you, Kurt. And you rose to the top. You earned it. It's your job. And we're looking forward to working with you.
Thank you, Commissioner McKenna.
You know, Kirk, I'm going to take my chance to congratulate you. Indeed, you did earn this, but it really started, your race started many years earlier as you've gained all this knowledge throughout the district, and you've been the kind of guy who's been willing to take on the tough tasks, some might say the impossible tasks, to see them to completion. And you've proven yourself many times over. But indeed, there were candidates from all over the nation, and you did continue to prove yourself. And so I'm just so pleased and tickled to have you as the next general manager. And I can't wait for that opportunity as we roll forward over the into the next year to work with together. So congratulations, Kurt.
Thank you, Commissioner Arsenault.
All right. Well, is there any other matters to come before the commission? Hearing none, we will adjourn. And again, congratulations, Kirk.
Thank you very much.